This is the Michael K. Show podcast.
I'm joyful and fun.
Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2.
That's cool, man!
On 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Monday to one and all. It is the 31st day of May 2021. Dan Grasso sitting in for the guys on the Michael K. Show here on 98.7 ESPN. 800-919-3776 is the telephone number. Anthony Pusick, Mike Aleshmagoon hanging out with you on the producing side of things today. And before we get started here this afternoon, just want to, of course, take the time because it's a holiday. It's an important holiday with it being Memorial Day. And we want to say thanks. We want to pay respects to those that really paid the ultimate sacrifice in protecting our freedoms, allowing us to enjoy the lives that we enjoy and to do the things that we do on a day-in, day-out basis. So cannot say thank you enough to those that served, those that continue to serve, and even those that will serve one day down the road. You are the true heroes. You are the ones that we all aspire to be. So we thank you tremendously from the bottom of our hearts. And with that, we can get into some sports here because we have plenty to talk about. As we get ready, you know, it's funny, we get ready to turn the calendar to the month of June. And normally, you know, in a normal year, you have your baseball, Mets, Yankees, you know, you're getting ready to enter that second third of the baseball season, maybe getting a little bit of an understanding as to, you know, the course of the summer, the way things are going to go for both of these teams. But now, because you have playoff basketball, which is extending a little bit later on into the season because the season started later and with the hockey and everything, we got playoff basketball in this town with both of the teams, the Knicks and the Nets. The Nets certainly not in as dire a situation that the Knicks are in. And we'll talk about the Nets a little bit later on because the story with the Nets is more off the court than it has anything to do with on the court, okay? The Yankees, in case you just tuning in, Miss Bob talking about it, they fell short once again today. The bats were lifeless. There was not a heck of a lot going on offensively. And once again, the Rays have their number. They dropped the opener of an important four-game series, 3-1. Yanks continuing to spin out of control here. But we'll start with the Knicks because we're a little over 24 hours since they fell behind 3-1 in the best of seven against the Atlanta Hawks. And it really was a weekend to forget down there in Atlanta. That goes without saying, right? And yesterday's game, probably the worst of the series by far for this basketball team. You got the sense at the end of the game yesterday that Atlanta was kind of toying with the Knicks a little bit. Even got a little chippy at the end with Julius Randle and Danilo Gallinari, which there's nothing wrong with that. There really and truly isn't. And I had no problem with what Randle did, kind of letting a message be served that, hey, we're not going to go away quietly. We're going to stick up for our teammates. I guess Gallinari took a little bit of a shot at Reggie Bullock. Nothing wrong with the way Randle handled it. And I don't think Tom Thibodeau had any problem with it either. You saw the reaction there on the sidelines, and certainly his teammates didn't. But over the last couple of games down in Atlanta, it was really two bad quarters that did in the Knicks. Second quarter on Friday night in game three, and then right out of the locker room to start the second half yesterday. You know what? They let their guard down for a couple of minutes, and before you know it, the Hawks had stretched that lead to one that pretty much became insurmountable. And that was it. And we're four games into this series, and it goes without saying, we haven't even come close to seeing the A game yet from this basketball team from start to finish. Not even in game two, a game that they won. Remember, they played a good second half, and that's what keyed the victory to even up the series. Knicks have had good quarters, but Atlanta's had more good quarters. And that's why they're one win away from moving on to the second round and, in all likelihood, a matchup with the Philadelphia 76ers. Trae Young's been the best player in this series. It's not even close. And when you get into playoff basketball, right? You need your stars to be stars. I know that there's guys who have carved out a legacy throughout time, in really all sports, in being able to deliver in the big moment. And in this case, the playoffs. You know, you think about Big Shot Bob, like Robert Horry, all those championships he won throughout the course of his career, you know, making timely shots in the postseason. But Robert Horry wasn't a star, right? He had stars on his team. Those guys did their job, but then when they needed somebody else to step up and fill the void and make a big shot, you know what? Robert Horry was there. Trae Young's a star. He's played like a star. Knicks thought they had a couple of stars. They were supposed to have a couple of stars coming into this series. But where are they? The Atlanta star contingent has been better than the Knicks star contingent. And you cannot win in the postseason without your big-time players getting it done. And of course, it begins and ends with Julius Randle. Now, he was a little bit better yesterday. A little bit better. But not enough. RJ Barrett was a little bit better yesterday. But not enough. You know, you think about Julius Randle. And look, this season, forget about the Knicks as a whole. But with Randle specifically, it came out of nowhere. Nobody saw this coming. Julius Randle this season was a top 10 player in the NBA. That's how good he was. He was a top 10 player. He probably, when the final vote is released, you're going to see that he got some MVP votes. He's probably, in my guess, going to finish somewhere in that, I don't know, 6 to 8 or 9 range in the MVP voting. And I think that it's justified, and I think that it's well-deserved because that's how good he was. But he hasn't even been, forget about one of the 10 best players in the sport, he hasn't even been one of the 10 best players in the playoffs. Not even close. Not even close. And that's one of the reasons why the Knicks are in the deficit that they're dealing with right now. Derrick Rose is not supposed to be, at this stage of his career, your best player in the postseason. And that's what Derrick Rose has become. You know, Derrick Rose, when he was acquired by this team, and look, I was a little apprehensive when it happened. I didn't know if it was going to work out or not, because if you're a Knicks fan, you think about Derrick Rose's first tour of duty with this basketball team and how that ended up. And it certainly was not a happy ending. And now he's a little bit older, and you know he's a long way removed from MVP Derrick Rose. If this was 2010, 2011, you know, pre-injuries and all the other stuff that transpired, you say, yeah, sure, why not? Derrick Rose, great. But not in 2021. Derrick Rose is not supposed to be playing 39 minutes a night. No way. He wasn't playing 39 minutes a night during the regular season. But that is what has been asked of him because Tom Thibodeau right now is just trying to throw stuff up against the wall and see what sticks. And look, we had questions about the Knicks point guard rotation even before the postseason started. You know, people were screaming left and right, why is Elfrid Payton still starting? Why is Elfrid Payton in the lineup? Well, now it got to the point where Elfrid Payton was almost just getting a ceremonial start, playing 4 or 5 minutes, and then you never saw him again. And now he's been a DNP the last two games. Now, I don't know if a guy like Derrick Rose, who's a little bit older and has been playing a lot more minutes than certainly he bargained for and a lot of fans bargained for, I don't know if that quick turnaround from Friday night's game to a 1 p.m. matinee tip-off on Sunday had any sort of an effect on him. I don't know. But here is the other collateral effect by having Derrick Rose play all those minutes and having Derrick Rose be your starting point guard. You know what's happening? It also is weakening the Knicks bench because Derrick Rose was part of that bench mob and part of that second unit, which gave this team some life, which gave this team some energy, some good minutes, and most importantly, gave them some offensive production. Where is that now? Right? Alec Burks has had a big drop off in this series since game number one. You haven't been able to find him. Manuel Quickley, same thing. Reggie Bullock. You know what I see happening from Reggie Bullock? Reggie Bullock, to me, is getting worn down on the other end of the floor. Having to chase around guys to where he's got nothing left when it comes to hoisting up shots, especially from downtown on the offensive end, which is what you come to expect from him. So there's a lot of things that are plaguing this team, and it's all kind of circling and spiraling together at the same time and at the most inopportune time for this club, where they need it the most. So if your stars aren't producing, your bench players aren't producing, where are you getting points from? And on the flip side, you look at the opponent, right? Look at Atlanta. Look how many guys are getting it done for them, whether it's John Collins, whether it's Bogdan Bogdanovic, Gallinari, Herter, Lou Williams, you know, has it in him. And you got Clint Capella cleaning up the glass left and right. And I just mentioned it a couple of seconds ago there with Bob, right? There was this misconception, I think, before the series started by the bulk of the fan base, and maybe even in the media to a certain degree. And I think that everybody just got caught up too much in the Knicks hoopla, right? Here they are, 8 years since they've been in the playoffs. They're finally good again. Season that came out of nowhere that they were almost automatically going to be gifted a first-round win. Like, oh, they made the playoffs. They got home court advantage in the first round. There's no way they're going to lose to the Atlanta Hawks. You kidding me? It's not like they're going up against some superpower. Not playing Philadelphia. They're not playing Brooklyn. They're not playing, you know, a team with a lot of tradition like the Boston Celtics or whatnot. Now you're playing the Atlanta Hawks. What tradition do they have? The Hawks? You swept them in the regular season. There's no way you could lose. But it was a 4-5 series. A 4-5 series and teams that had the same exact record during the regular season. In my book, that's a coin flip. The 4-5 series are supposed to be the tightest series in the playoffs. And that is really kind of what I expected. Look, I picked Knicks in 7 before the series started. And it still could happen, but a lot is going to have to happen to even get to that point right now. And I felt that when sizing up this series and looking at these two teams, I felt that the Knicks could win. But I think the majority of people felt the Knicks should win. And that's irresponsible. And so far over the first 4 games, I think it's proven to be that. And I brought up that head-to-head during the regular season. When you talk about regular season matchups, this is in any sport, any sport. And then you try to use that as a basis to try to predict what's going to happen in the playoffs. That's dangerous. Because the two don't necessarily sync up. You have to dissect each game individually and examine what was exactly happening that day, who was playing, who wasn't playing. I mean, you look at some of the principles, right? That last game of the regular season that they played against each other, Trae Young got hurt in the third quarter and didn't play down the stretch when the Knicks took control of that basketball game and ended up winning it, right? Danilo Gallinari missed a couple of games that they played during the regular season. DeAndre Hunter missed a couple of games that they played during the regular season. And maybe most importantly, 2 out of the 3 games that the Knicks and Hawks played against each other during the regular season, the Hawks were coached by a different guy. And it was when they decided to make the coaching change is when their season really took off, and that got them to a level where the Knicks were in the Eastern Conference standings. So throw out the 3-0 head-to-head in the regular season. It means absolutely nothing. And if you haven't figured it out yet, guess what? Breaking news. The Hawks are a good basketball team. They're really, really good, and they've got the best player in this series. And also, if you want to use the last 2 games as some sort of a basis, they're also pretty good at home as well. All right, they've won 13 straight games in their building. 13, including the 2 that they just had against the Knickerbockers here in the last few days. And they've beaten teams like Phoenix, Portland, Milwaukee, who are all better than the Knicks on their home floor. And like I said, I get the excitement. Hell, I'm excited. You know, especially everything that we've been going through, being shut in and in a pandemic. You know, you look for anything that provides some sort of a lift, some sort of hope, some sort of enjoyment. The Knicks gave you that this year, and then some. And then things started to slowly open up, and you saw some people being let into Madison Square Garden, and you had some exciting games, and you had some fans there, and then all of a sudden, bam, the playoffs got here, and you saw Madison Square Garden as loud and as raucous and as crazy as we've seen it, and seems like in years. So how could they lose, right? You know, you buy into all that electricity, but maybe we got caught up in that a little bit. And I think it twists reality to a certain extent. You know what the Knicks are? I'm going to tell you what the Knicks are. They're a good team. They're a good team this year. And it was a great coaching job by Tom Thibodeau. People are taking shots at Tibbs right now, too. Oh, he's not making the adjustments. Nate McMillan is, you know, coaching the pants off of Tibbs and that sort of thing. Hey, you know what? Coaching only gets you so far. It only gets you so far. You know, Tom Thibodeau and the head coach over there in Phoenix, Monty Williams, those two guys flip a coin for the coach of the year. I personally would give it to Tibbs because, you know what? The Knicks didn't make a big acquisition during the summertime like Chris Paul, or during the offseason like Chris Paul, who has keyed that team and who got them to the point where they were challenging for the number 1 seed in the Western Conference. Monty Williams had that guy in Chris Paul. Tibbs didn't. And you saw prior to yesterday, when Chris Paul was basically out there playing with one arm against the Lakers, the Suns look like a shell of the team that they were during the regular season. You take Chris Paul out of the mix, they're not as good. It doesn't matter how brilliant a coach that Monty Williams is. And it's shocking to me that that's a series once again, because now Anthony Davis is hurt, which, again, every which way the wind blows, it seems like Anthony Davis is down for the count and can't stay on the court. But we'll talk about that a little bit later on. So, yeah, Tibbs is great. Tibbs helped this team win 41 games, get home court advantage in the first round, but he can't sit there and make guys do something that they're just not capable of doing. Maybe he maxed out every last ounce of ability out of this basketball team this year. He got Julius Randle to play better than he has ever played in his entire NBA career. Julius Randle was earning the label of a journeyman in the early part of his career, right? How many different teams, how many different uniforms Julius Randle wore before he signed with the New York Knicks, right? And nobody ever thought of him as a marquee foundation franchise type player before this season, before Tibbs arrived on the scene. Remember a couple of summers ago, Julius Randle was thought of as a consolation prize. Julius Randle's the guy. Oh, my. So they couldn't get a meeting with Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, Kawhi Leonard. Nobody wanted to go play for the Knicks. So they had to throw a bunch of money and give a multi-year deal at Julius Randle because he was the only sucker that would take it. That was the conversation back then. That was the narrative. And look at what Tibbs was able to get out of him. A guy who had an MVP caliber season. And you know what? He hasn't played well the first four games of the playoffs. That's not the coach's fault. He can't go out there and make shots for him. The group plays hard. They play defense. They play together. And you know what? That's okay. It really and truly is. That's okay. You know, maybe this team got a little bit ahead of themselves this year, and maybe in the fans' mind. You know, maybe this is all this club was supposed to do this season. It's not like this team was, you got to win a round or the season is a f-. And if anybody's looking at that in that prism, and through that microscope, well, you know what? That's foolish. You can't look at this season and say, if the Knicks don't win a series, the year is a failure. Do I have to remind people? Do I have to remind you what the over-under was for this basketball team in Vegas at the beginning of the year? What was it, 22 wins over-under? So how are they supposed to win a series? How are they supposed to necessarily just go out there and say, oh yeah, we have to win this. We've got to beat the Atlanta Hawks. We've got to. Relax. Relax. Is it disappointing if it comes to an end on Wednesday night and you go out quietly in five games? Yeah, sure it is. But who's to say it's over yet? I'll tell you what I think coming up, but I want to hear from you at 800-919-3776. Is your perception, is the way you view this season altered in any way based on what you've seen from these four games? Are you jumping ship that fast? You want to throw guys like Julius Randle overboard because he hasn't played well in four games and we're just going to throw out the 72 games that he played above and beyond anybody ever thought that he could play? We'll do plenty on the Nets. Like I said, all the baseball, Yankees quieted down once again today by the Tampa Bay Rays. The Mets, rumor has it, are actually, and I know this seems rare, the Mets are actually going to play a baseball game tonight. I mean, I can't believe it, and I guess we got to keep our fingers crossed until we actually see a pitch being thrown, but they made it out to Arizona. They have a roof. So you don't have to worry about the game being rained out. I mean, it is incredible. I mean, what are we up to now for the Mets? 10, 11 postponements this year? It's crazy. And thank God we got this weather out of here. Probably as bad a Memorial Day weekend weather-wise in this area that I've ever witnessed in my entire life. With the rain and the winter-like temperatures. I mean, Mother Nature, thanks for the joke. But nobody's laughing anymore.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
So, before we get to the phones, look, I know it's a steep hill being down 3-1. And I know that this team over four games has not really given you a heck of a lot of confidence that lets you believe that they could get their way back into the series. And I know the history, 13 times, what is it? They're down 3-1 in the history of the franchise. They've never come back and won the series. I get it. But I will say this. despite what we've seen the last couple of games in Atlanta, I'm fairly confident that things will turn around at least for game five. Because regardless, the Garden's going to be bonkers. The place is going to be a zoo, which is going to be in favor of the Knicks. And I think that the extra day off, believe it or not, is going to help. You know, instead of getting right back out there tomorrow, you know, having that extra day, you know, getting the last two games out of your system, going on to your home court where you know you're going to have that whole building behind you. And, you know, the Hawks have never been in these closeout situations collectively. You know, this team has never won anything as a group. I don't know if they've developed that killer instinct yet. They may walk into that game tomorrow, and if the Knicks punch them in the mouth early, and if that Garden crowd just completely suffocates them early on, I could see them kind of retreating a little bit and saying, all right, you know what? We'll finish this thing up back at our place in game six. Maybe. I'm just speculating. But I think the Knicks have at least one more good one left in them. Given as well as they played in that building all year, as well as they've played all season long. But the unfortunate reality is that they're not winning this series. They're not orchestrating this comeback unless they ultimately get one game down in Atlanta, which is going to have to be game six if they're going to do this. And as I said, if they fall short, it's not because this team underachieved. It does not tarnish what they've done this season. This team gave you a joyride out of absolute nowhere this season. Nobody thought that we would be sitting here on, you know, May the 31st or whenever Wednesday, what's Wednesday's day? June the 2nd, that we'd be talking about a playoff game at Madison Square Garden involving this basketball team. Nobody did. But, hey, they've surprised us before, too, right? Remember early April, they went on that skid, they lost 5 out of 6, and what do? They ran off 12 out of 13 and righted themselves and really put themselves in position to be in a position to get home court advantage here in the playoffs, which they ultimately did. So we'll see if they got one more in them. 800-919-3776 is the telephone number. Let's go to the phone. Started off with Simon in New Haven. He's on 98.7 ESPN. Simon, how are you?
Hey, how are you? I wanted to talk about the Yankees.
Yeah, what's going on?
We got to get rid of some people here. This is ridiculous. We got to get rid of Boone. We got to get rid of Gardner. We got to get rid of these hitting coaches. This is the same record with Boone. Oh, excuse, we got to get better. And it's still the same thing. Come on now.
Well, here's the thing, Simon. Thank you for the phone call. I didn't want to open up with a Yankee call. That's my fault. I'll take the hit on that. But nobody's getting fired. Okay? Nobody is getting fired. It's Memorial Day. There's still over 100 games left. Aaron Boone doesn't even have a full deck. Now, look, I'm not going to be the first one to sit here and tell you that, you know, Aaron Boone, you get him confused with, you know, Joe Torre or Casey Stengel. It doesn't make you forget those guys when it comes to, you know, his ability in the dugout as the manager. But he doesn't have a full roster right now. And do I think that this is a championship caliber team? No, I do not. And especially given the way they're conceived right now and the product he's putting out there on the field. Right? And they have very little margin for error. That's the big picture here with the Yankees. With all the injuries they have, you know, Jameson Taillon goes out there today, gives you 5 innings, 3 runs. That's not terrible. It's not great, but it's not terrible. But the bottom line is this lineup, which everybody thought was going to set records this year offensively because, you know, they're so lethal. You got DJ LeMahieu back and Judge and Stanton and everybody else and Gleyber Torres. They're not doing their part. So, yeah, unfortunately, when the starting pitcher gives up 3 runs, that does them in. Which is pretty sad that they can't come back from that. Frank in the car, up next on 98.7 ESPN. Frank, how are you?
Hey, Danny, what's up?
What's up, Frank?
These last 4 games with the Knicks have got me thinking they're not as good as the regular season made them seem, but I don't think they're as bad as these last few games they've been playing. And to me, that's a real big problem because that means we'll be stuck in purgatory for years. So unless they can make a big move to really bring someone in, I don't see how they really get that much better. And even if you bring somebody in, if you make a trade for Donovan Mitchell, you got to give up R.J. Barrett plus picks and probably somebody else. And if you do that, well, you're stuck kind of at the same spot where you got a 1 and a 2. Now, granted, that would be a better 1 and a 2. Well, you're still missing that 3 that maybe isn't as good as those top 2, but he takes the pressure off of those top 2. Have a good one, Danny.
Frankie, be good. Here's what I'll say. A couple things. I disagree that the Knicks are in purgatory. You know, if you're the four seed in the Eastern Conference or any conference, that's not purgatory. Purgatory to me is if you're like the seven or the eight. You're the Washington Wizards. You're in purgatory, it seems like, each year because you're not getting any better. And they have a couple of superstars on that team in Beal and Russell Westbrook, but they're not getting any better. You know, you think about Washington, right? Westbrook and Beal as their 1-2, that's better than the Knicks 1-2 if you want to consider it Randall and Barrett. But yet, where did that get them? It's all about team and it's all about the mix. And I don't think that Washington team is put together very well. But another story for another. But like, you know, Russell Westbrook the other day. People just look at statistics in this game and it leaves them so short-sighted. His team is about to get swept by Philadelphia. All right, and Philadelphia is the superior team. I get it. They could go to the NBA Finals. But Russell Westbrook the other night in Game 3, he fills the stat sheet again with another triple-double. And people are, again, just throwing bouquets at him like it's the greatest thing they've ever seen with all these triple-doubles. Who the hell cares? I mean, in the NBA nowadays, it's fairly routine to put together a triple-double. Russell Westbrook's team lost that game by 30. But all people care about is that he had a triple-double. Who the heck cares? They lost by 30. It was non-competitive. Jimmy Butler had a triple-double in one of these games with Miami Heat. You know how bad Jimmy Butler was in that series against Milwaukee? Do you? Bryn Forbes, coming off the bench for the Bucks, was better than Jimmy Butler. So, the Knicks aren't in purgatory. You know, Indiana, Charlotte, that's like purgatory. You know, Charlotte especially, because they don't get any better. Because nobody wants to go to Charlotte. You know, Jordan's got to get creative or give ridiculous contracts out to people like Gordon Hayward to convince them to go down there. But that's not the case with the Knicks. The Knicks are a young team. The Knicks are building something here. Purgatory, that's not the case. And remember something. You know, once this round is over and we advance into round two, it's going to be eight teams left in this sport playing basketball. So, if the Knicks get bounced here and their season ends at the hands of the Hawks, you got to ask yourself the question, are the Knicks one of the eight best teams in basketball? Forget about where they finished in the standings in the Eastern Conference. Because if you're that upset and you think that they absolutely should beat this Hawks team and it's a catastrophe if they don't get out of round one, you're saying this is one of the eight best teams in the sport. I can't say that. I can't say that. But what I could also tell you is that if you look in the Eastern Conference with those top three seeds, Philadelphia, Brooklyn, Milwaukee, they are in their own class. They're on another level from the Knicks and everybody else. Think about the drop-off from Milwaukee at 3 to where the Knicks are at 4. It's not close. Those three teams could go to the finals. Knicks can't go to the finals. Knicks aren't put together to go that far and that deep. So maybe that just goes to show the balance of power in the Eastern Conference is a little bit askew. It's more top-heavy. Western Conference, that's all messed up. Because most people think that the best team in the conference is not even the 1 seed or the 2 seed or even the 3 seed. Right? The Lakers and the Clippers are who most people feel are best equipped to go to the finals. And the Clippers are the 4 and the Lakers are the 7 because they were hurt all year and they didn't care about the regular season. Patrick and Bell River up next here on 98.7 ESPN. Pat, how are you?
Hey, what's going on? I totally agree with you. Anybody who's down in the Knicks right now are just bandwagon fans, and I can't believe that they're mad at the season they just gave us. I wasn't expecting them to go anywhere this year, and the fact that they got into the playoffs as a 4 seed, I can't believe it. They were rated one of the highest defenses this year. Tibbs did a great job. Picking up Derrick Rose was unbelievable, especially since we had a bad taste in our mouth from him last time. I mean, I just can't believe anybody could be mad at this team with what Julius Randle has done.
Patrick, I agree with you, and I thank you for the call. I'll say this, and this is, I think, a conversation that's worth having. If you want to be upset about something, and if you want to maybe take stock and try to evaluate where this team and where this organization is heading in the future, I think we could really zero in on the subject of Julius Randle. I think that's fair game. And what I mean by that is, not whether or not he should be a part of the team moving forward, and he should be part of the club as they continue to build and get better. I think we could sit here and have a good, adult, honest conversation about whether or not you feel Julius Randle is a number one and you build around him. You know, one of our previous callers talked about going and bringing in another star. That I agree with. That I agree with 100%. This team needs another alpha male. Not a supporting player. Not a guy who's a third or fourth option or somebody that's going to be good off the bench. No, they need another go-to guy. And I don't know who that player is. I don't know who that player is. If you ask me, you know, he brought up Donovan Mitchell. I don't know. Remember, there was that report in the beginning of that series with Utah that, you know, there was some animosity between Mitchell and the organization because he wanted to play game one. They held him out, and I guess some feelings were hurt. You know, last year, remember Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert with the whole COVID thing, and, you know, you thought they were at odds, but they got both of those guys' names on long-term contracts, and all that stuff got pushed aside, even though Mitchell's a local guy. Knicks have $60 million under the cap to work with. Right? They've got draft choices. They've got some capital to play with. I think their best path to bringing in a so-called another impact star player is probably looking around the league and finding that disgruntled superstar on another club and bringing him here over to the Knicks. And the other thing that you have to examine is the success that they've had this year. Has that opened up enough eyes around the NBA? And what I mean by that is, next time you have marquee free agents, are they going to take a meeting with the Knicks? Are you going to seriously consider signing with a team like the New York Knicks? Or are they just going to be used for leverage and, you know, given the runaround like LeBron James did, like Kyrie, like Kevin Durant, Kawhi Leonard, on and on and on and on and on? Did this season do enough to alter the perception of the franchise in and around NBA circles? That needs to be answered as we move into the offseason and beyond. I kind of think it has. I think a lot of people respect Tibbs. I think a lot of people have respect for the new regime led by Leon Rose and Worldwide West and guys like that. It's about relationships in this sport. And the Knicks have guys who, in terms of their extended network, they have those relationships.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Islanders hockey, big game two for Barry Trotz's boys up in Boston against the machine known as the Boston Bruins. See if they can quiet down the perfection line tonight as Pastrnak went off with a hat trick in game number one. Still haven't seen any reports as to who is getting the starting assignment tonight in goal for the Islanders. You know, they like to go back and forth, as we know. I can't pin game one on Sorokin entirely, but we'll see which way Barry Trotz goes. You never, never. Hey, I didn't think that the Vegas Golden Knights were going to throw Robin Leonard in there last night. You saw how that worked out for them. I think Avalanche just scored again, as a matter of fact, while we were in commercial. But we'll see. Big game for the Isles, though, tonight. Not that the series is over if they lose tonight, but they'd be best served to steal back the home ice advantage and get this one and even up this series. Get me on Twitter, at Dan Graca, G-R-A-C-A. Also want to tell you that the Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by GEICO. The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save. It's also the kind of service you get. Good thing GEICO's been perfecting both for over 75 years. Nets up 3-1 on Boston. Again, you're not learning anything about this Nets team in this series. And you knew that before they even threw the ball up in the air. You knew that this is how it was going to be. Nets have way too much firepower. They bounce back from the Game 3 loss. And remember, they only lost that game the other night because Jason Tatum had the Superman cape underneath his uniform. And he had a 50-burger that he pulled out there. And he would pretty much have to do that three more times for the Celtics to win this series because they're overmatched. And he didn't have that last night. He only gave you 40, which was still pretty damn good. But then no Kemba Walker, who was out of the lineup, and he really didn't have any other help to speak of. Boston is depleted right now, and the Nets are going to waltz to victory. At least they should. It would serve them best if they wrap this thing up tomorrow here, and then you put your feet up and you get ready for the Milwaukee Bucks, because Milwaukee is a team on a mission. All right. I think that this is a different Milwaukee team than the one that we've seen the last 2 years. The team that had home court advantage and that stubbed their toe in the playoffs. Last year, I almost threw out the window because of the bubble. That's not fair. And if you need any further proof about the bubble and how much of a joke it was and how it wasn't a fair and accurate representation about how these teams truly were, case in point, the Miami Heat. You know, the fact that Miami Heat went all the way to the NBA Finals last year, and the Heat were the worst team to make, that Heat team last year was the worst team to make the NBA Finals in 20 years. Easy. Easy. And you saw what happened to them this year. Milwaukee beat the you-know-what out of them and swept them out of the playoffs in four games. But I also think the Bucks are a better team than last year. They are a deeper team than last year. You know, getting Jrue Holiday upgraded that squad both offensively and defensively. They are a heck of a lot more deeper basketball team. You know, Bryn Forbes, I mentioned him coming off the bench. He outplayed Jimmy Butler. You know, the Heat's go-to guy, their number one. Bobby Portis, our old friend Bobby Portis, a guy who during his time with the New York Knicks played so well in one particular game that he owned and got his own Bobby Portis game named after him. Remember the game he had against the Chicago Bulls where he won early in the season? So he got the Bobby Portis game. That Bobby Portis has actually been okay here for Milwaukee. It's been okay. And he got the Greek Freak. He's heard all the chatter. He's heard all the talk. Those two MVPs are empty, some will have you believe. This team don't know how to win in the playoffs. Giannis don't know how to win in the playoffs. Giannis disappears in the playoffs. Last year he got hurt in the bubble too. But boy, it was downright scary what they did to the Heat. It was dominating at times. And I think that Nets-Bucks series will be a knock-em-out, drag-em-out brawl. And I think Milwaukee, more so than Philadelphia, is the team best put together in the Eastern Conference to beat the Brooklyn Nets. I really and truly believe that. But the Bucks have been sitting around since Saturday with their feet up, resting, waiting for the Nets. And the way the NBA does the schedule, look, the Nets series will probably wrap up tomorrow night, so they're probably not going to kick off round two until the earliest, what, Friday, Saturday? Probably Saturday, they have a prime time, ABC, Nets, Bucks, get people's eyeballs to the set. So Bucks are going to be off probably for about a week. So if the Nets want to get some of that rest, and you know that they're big on load management because the team was hurt all season long, they'd be best served to finish it up tomorrow night and then get ready for Milwaukee, because they're going to need it. That is going to be a war, an extremely physical series. Unfortunately for the Nets, they're getting more opposition from the people in the stands than they are from the team on the floor in the first round in the Celtics. And that leads us to, unfortunately, another example of bad behavior from the fan base. And I like that, you know, some people, depending on what you read on social media, and, you know, a lot of it is, you know, take it or leave it nonsense as far as I'm concerned. But you got people out there who actually believe that the yo-yo that threw the bottle at Kyrie last night, Kyrie had it coming. Because moments before that, he actually walked out the center court when they were leaving the floor and he stomped on the Celtics logo. Oh my gosh, really? He did? He actually stomped on the logo, like with his own actual foot? So naturally, you throw debris at him as he's walking off the floor, right? I mean, that's natural. Risk injuring him severely, of course. Well, he had it coming. He stepped on the floor. He could have stepped on the logo, too, and other players probably stepped on the logo, too, about 500 times over the course of that game going up and down the floor. But that one particular instant when the game was over, he stepped on it, and now he's a bad guy, and you got to throw something at him. Okay. You know, hey, we all do stupid things in our lives, and I guess that 21-year-old punk who threw the bottle and, you know, got arrested for it and is going off to jail, he'll have a long time to think about, like, to have that one back. Probably wishes he did. I don't know if he had any, you know, alcohol in his system, which may have, you know, played a part in it. If I had to wager a guess, I'd probably say yes, just because that's what happens nowadays. But he'll have a long time to think about that one. And he's not going to be thinking about it at all in that building because he's not going to be able to go back into it. And the remarkable thing about it, too, is when he saw that wide shot, like, I'm surprised he didn't hit another fan because he threw that thing over at least the full section, a little more. Right? I mean, he could, what if he hit somebody in the crowd? Thankfully, he hit nobody. But when you buy a ticket, and the reason we got to talk about this is because this has been happening way too frequently. When you buy a ticket, at least the way it used to be, I know that they don't have like paper tickets anymore, so it's a little bit different. But for years, on the back of your ticket, you had that like fine print, right? And it told you what you can and cannot do. Basically, it said you got to act like a human being. And if you want to act like an animal, and if you want to act like a jerk, well, here's the things that you can't do that fall under that category. But some people take it upon themselves to still kind of test the boundaries and see how far they can stretch it. And a guy like that has ended up in jail because of it. So, you know what? Good for him. Really, good for him. But it also doesn't say in that fine print in the back of the ticket that if you buy a ticket, you pay your admission, and you walk into either a stadium or an arena, it doesn't give you the right to act like you're at home watching the game. So you may throw stuff at the TV when you're home. You might scream and yell and curse, say ungodly things to some of the players when you're sitting on your couch watching it on TV. But you can't get away with doing that stuff when you go see the game in person. You can't do it. The guy last week that threw popcorn on Russell Westbrook. The yo-yo at the Garden that spit on Trae Young. Those fans in Utah that were taunting Ja Morant's family and yelling just despicable things at them. I don't get it. I really and truly don't get it. Because maybe they feel that they're shielded by their brethren in the building. That nothing's going to happen to me. I'm a tough guy now. Like, I would never do those things face-to-face. Like, I would never throw popcorn on Russell Westbrook if I was standing right in front of him or if I was passing him on the street because I know that he would probably beat me senseless. I would never spit on Trae Young because I know that he would probably dribble me like a basketball and shoot me into the hoop from three-point range. Right? I would never yell those things to John Morant's family, like if it was just me and John Morant's family, because then I'd have to probably defend myself. But I got people around me, so that's okay. You know, nobody's ever going to come at me because there's security there. There's other fans there. I'm bulletproof. Well, you are until you get caught. And thankfully, all the victims and all the people who have to put up with stuff like this, we have this great technology there in all these stadiums and all these ballparks that you have 87 million different cameras and everybody's got a camera phone and a video on their phone to where you can identify these people. And they can get punished as they deserve to be. And that's what's happening here. It's great. I got to be honest with you. Even in baseball, I think it goes too far sometimes. And what I mean by that is think of how many people and I for the life of me, I can never figure this out. How about the people who were sitting like in the first rows along the lines where if there's like either a fair ball, especially hit one right down the line and it maybe goes into the corner. You ever see the people that actually reach over and down onto the field to pick up the ball as it's rolling to them, even though it's in play and it's a fair ball? Like, what would possess you to do such a thing? It's a live ball. It's a live play. But yet people feel, hey, I'm at the game. This is my chance. I brought my glove. Let me reach over and pretend I'm still back in Little League and watch me snare this grounder. What does that do for you? Number one, it gets you a quick exit from the stadium. And maybe you get booted for good. For the life of me, this sense of entitlement at these games by fans, I don't get it. I'll take it even a step further, too. How about, you know, and you're going to pass this off and everybody's going to dismiss it and say, oh, well, it's nothing. It is tradition. It's tradition. How about what goes on at Wrigley Field? Like, how much longer is that going to last now? Right, Wrigley Field, the opposing team hits a home run out there in the bleachers. You throw the baseball back. Well, don't they also tell you that you have to refrain from throwing objects onto the field and stop throwing things onto the field? But it's okay at Wrigley Field because they've been doing it for 100 years. But everywhere else, it's a crime and it's a violation. Like, I always thought that that didn't equate to me. And it still doesn't. So while we're trying to safeguard the players and the athletes and everybody that's out there performing that you're paying to come see, it's okay at a place like Wrigley to just throw an errant baseball there. Again. But par for the course. And you know what they should do, at least when it comes to basketball, if this stuff is going to continue? And more often than not, it's a fan of the home team and they're doing it to antagonize a member of the opposition. Like in the case of the Russell Westbrook game and, you know, Trae Young getting spit on at Madison Square Garden. If that's the case, you know what? They should come up with a rule that would actually penalize the home team. Like if it's basketball, how about like a technical foul if they ever catch somebody doing that? A technical foul on the home team. You know, two shots plus the ball. Imagine if it happens at a critical juncture like late in the fourth quarter. So it goes against the Knicks. It goes against Philadelphia, like in the case of Westbrook. What about something like that? Do you think that that would actually get through the mind of people to stop acting like morons? Or maybe they don't even care. Maybe it's people who go to the games. Maybe they're not even true fans. They couldn't even care who wins, who loses. They just want to go have a good time, maybe be seen, maybe go viral. How about that? But it continues. And when will it stop? I have no idea. You would think that the rate of frequency of these things just continuing to happen and big moments, invisible moments, especially like the playoffs here, that it would serve a message, but it doesn't. I mean, we had 2-3 of them just last week, and then last night, boom, once again up in Boston. And it's not everybody. It's not all the fans. It's just that small percentage, right? Whether it's one or two people out of 20,000. But then they spoil it for everybody else. They give them a bad name. And that's not the way it's supposed to be. Because the majority of fans, I think, are responsible, behave well enough, and can control themselves when they go to these games. But it needs to stop. And it has absolutely nothing to do with whether or not you hate the player, regardless of what he said about the city, the fan base, you, whatever. And if you didn't hear Kyrie from after the game last night, this is what he had to say on the incidents between fans and players.
Well, we keep saying things like we're human, but we don't get treated like we have rights when we're out there at times and people feel entitled to go and do things like that. You know, we claim that we care about each other as human beings, but, you know, we just call things out before they happen, like I did the other day. And like I'm telling people, just keep it basketball. And then you have things that happen at the Garden. You know, you got things happening in Utah. And, you know, there's a lot of history there of things happening. So just do your research, I would say to everybody. And hopefully the respect of the game is kept at a high level moving forward. That's what I hope.
I mean, forget about research. What about just like acting like a decent human being? Like I said, for the life of me, I don't understand what gives people the audacity that they could just walk into a venue and just throw garbage at people. What about the water bottle incident specifically?
It's unfortunate that sports has come to a lot of this, you know, kind of crossroads where you're seeing a lot of old ways come up. It's been that way in history in terms of entertainment, performers, and sports for a long period of time of just underlying racism and just treating people like they're in a human zoo, you know, throwing stuff at people, saying things. You know, there's a certain point where it just gets to be too much. So, you know, I called it out. I just wanted to keep it strictly basketball. And then you just see that people just feel very entitled out here. You know, they pay for the tickets. Great. I'm grateful that coming in to watch a great performance, but it's just, you know, we're not at the theater. We're not throwing tomatoes and other random stuff at the people that are performing. You know, it's just, it's too much. And it's a reflection on, you know, us as a whole when you have fans acting like that. So, you know, hopefully people learn their lessons from being banned for however many years of being arrested. But, you know, it's always going to be an occasion. So
he's right about that. I don't think it's ever going to go away. As sad as it sounds, I don't think it's ever going to go away. And lastly, what about KD, Kevin Durant, on the episode?
Fans got to grow up at some point. I know that being in the house for a year and a half with the pandemic, got a lot of people on edge, got a lot of people stressed out. But when you come to these games, you got to realize, man, these men are human. You know, we not animals. We not in a circus. You coming to the game is not all about you as a fan. So have some respect for the game. Have some respect for these human beings. And have some respect for yourself. Your mother wouldn't be proud of you throwing water bottles at basketball players or spitting on players or tossing popcorn. So grow the f*** up and enjoy the game. You know, it's bigger than you.
He's not wrong. It's not wrong. And look, I don't always agree with the things that Kevin Durant and Kyrie say, but with what you just heard right there, how can you take exception to that? They're right. You know, it's just about being a decent human being. It's as simple as that. It doesn't take a lot. It shouldn't have to be hard to act responsibly when you go to these games. And just like you heard all these other players say, would you do these things if you were passing them on the street? If you weren't protected by tens of thousands of people around you and you knew that there was no way that they would be able to get at you. It's cowardly. 800-919-3776. Again, we talked a lot about the Knicks in that first hour, about what the expectations were. Nets are in a completely, completely different ballpark. The Nets have to go deep. The Nets have a championship or bust label attached to them. Just getting to the NBA Finals is not good enough for this Nets team. I'm sorry, it's not. They have to win it. And should they get bounced by Milwaukee in the second round, oh boy. It is going to be open season on them, as it should be. Because this is what they wanted. This is what they brought upon themselves. It was all about winning the title. Doesn't matter about the culture. Doesn't matter about coming together. Go get the trophy. Boston was a scrimmage. The real playoffs for the Nets start later this week.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
You know, it doesn't matter where it is. Any one of these games that you turn on now, you know, the hockey, the basketball, even baseball to an extent, as those stadiums in certain cities are filling up, it like warms your soul seeing the crowds and the capacity again. It's like it's the way it should be, which is, hey, perfect as far as I'm concerned. You want to get me on Twitter, feel free to do so at Dan Graca, G-R-A-C-A. So I mentioned Memorial Day, and why is this significant? Well, a third of the baseball season's gone, right? We're now 2 months in. Still got a lot of real estate still to play with. I'm not sitting here telling you that it's over by any stretch of the imagination and, you know, teams' fates are sealed. That's not what I'm saying. But Memorial Day is generally that first kind of mile marker when you evaluate teams and take stock into where you are for the particular season. By Memorial Day, you kind of know who you are, right? It's 50 games or so. And I always like to bring up an example from two seasons ago. Washington Nationals in 2019. They were 19-31 in their first 50 games. 19-31. Their bullpen was atrocious. Dave Martinez, the manager, looked like he was overmatched. It was only a matter of time before he was going to get fired because they were underachieving. They had a ton of talent on that team. They got their act together. The rest is history. They ended up lifting the trophy at the end of the season. Now, other teams that are struggling and are in that same type of predicament right now, it might not be as fortunate. They might not have the same happy ending. However, if you want to go back to 1995, so about 25 years worth of sample size, and that was the beginning of the wild card era in baseball, 157 teams have been in first place or tied for first place on Memorial Day. Okay, so that's a pretty nice sample size. Out of those 157 teams, 85 of them won the division. 54%. So that's just a little bit more than half. 103 of those teams, which is 65%, so essentially two-thirds, ended up making the playoffs. So by that metric, two-thirds, that's four out of the six divisions. The six first-place teams as of today, two of them are not going to make the playoffs if you go by that data. So let me remind you right now, six divisions, the first-place teams are Tampa Bay, Chicago, the White Sox, the Oakland A's, the Mets. Chicago and St. Louis are tied in the Central, and San Francisco is percentage points ahead of the San Diego Padres. Padres will play a little bit later on this evening. So right there, what two teams are not making the postseason out of the ones that I just gave you? Padres actually lost today, excuse me, to the Cubs. They played this afternoon. You know, are you confident enough on what you've seen from the Mets to where you can sit here and say unequivocally they're going to make the postseason? I don't know. They've only played 45 games. They've played like five, six fewer games than everybody else in the sport. You know, they may be one of those candidates. And as I told you, I'm still a little iffy about what to expect from them. You know, can that starting pitching keep up? Are these guys that are injured going to come back and contribute? Because remember, before Conforto and McNeil went down, they weren't exactly ripping it up and having all-star starts to their season. You know, the Mets would probably be one of those teams that I would maybe pin in that category as they're no sure thing. You know, right now out West, San Francisco is a team that's tied for first with the Padres by percentage points. Giants, to me, I still think they have a lot more room to grow. I am not convinced that they're going to be playing at this clip the rest of the summer. I could see Oakland being a team that tails off a little bit. I picked the Astros to win that division way back at the beginning of the season. So you get my drift. There's going to be two teams that are ultimately going to miss out on the playoffs from where they're sitting right now on Memorial Day. And the Yankees aren't in first place. All right, they're still in the conversation. It's a four-team race in the AL East, excluding Baltimore. But just like that, the Yankees are now five out of first place in the loss column. And they can't beat the team that they're chasing in the Tampa Bay Rays. And they got a big week ahead of them now with the Rays for four. And then you got the Red Sox coming in for the first time this weekend. Tampa's not going to play at this clip the rest of the year. They're not going to win like 16 out of 17 games the remainder of the year. If they are, they're going to win the division by, you know, 25, 30 games. That's not realistic. The problem with the Yankees is, are they going to be able to hang around until they're whole again? And how aggressive can Brian Cashman be to get some pieces in here to at least help them not only contribute, but maybe, you know what, improve the club from when they were even before all the injuries took place? The problem that you find right now, if you even want to be aggressive as a general manager, is that there's a lot of other teams that you're going to call up and they're going to say to you, nah, you know, we're still unsure about what we are. We don't know if we're going to be buyers or if we're going to be sellers. We just don't know. Like, take Minnesota, for example, all right? Minnesota, I thought, was going to be a playoff team this year. A lot of people thought they'd be a playoff team out of the AL Central as a wild card or maybe even a team that wins that division. Minnesota's been terrible this year. They're 9 under 500. They've been awful. But the Twins have a guy, namely Jose Berríos, right? Starting pitcher. Great stuff. Maybe not elite, but he's got the tools to maybe become an upper echelon starting pitcher in this sport. You know, consistent all-star. If you call up the Twins and you say, hey, you know what, you're 9 under 500, you're 11 games out of first place right now. Berríos, I think, has another year left on his contract. You willing to part ways with him if we give you a couple of prospects? What do you think? That's the type of guy that if I'm Brian Cashman, I'm looking to bring in. You know, there's a guy in Cincinnati, Luis Castillo, that the Yankees were kicking the tires on during the offseason, you know, having conversations with the Reds. Guy's got great stuff. He's been awful this year. For whatever reason, he's been awful. But this is a guy who a couple of seasons ago in 2019, like the first 3 months of the season, he was probably your Cy Young winner in the National League. And then DeGrom got going and he just took off and then forget it. The guy's got filthy stuff. But is Cincinnati going to be at the point already where they say, nah, you know, we just don't know where we are yet and if we want to pull the plug on our season? But the Yanks need to be aggressive. because they weren't aggressive enough in the offseason, in my opinion. You know, signing a guy like Corey Kluber and expecting him to cure everything that ails your rotation and to provide stability behind Gerrit Cole, that was an ill-fated move. I said so at the time, and I'm not patting myself on the back because Kluber shut down. But you know what? I'm a realist. And I know that if you go and buy a car that hasn't run for 2 years because of mechanical problems, and then 2 months into you driving it, it shuts down, and then you have to take it into the shop for a long, lengthy repair, who's the fool? And who should be shocked if that happens? Isn't that essentially what took place with the Yankees and Corey Kluber? The guy barely pitched for the last 2 years. And okay, he throws a no-hitter, and he throws a couple of good games, but then his shoulder's inflamed, and you know what? We may have some problems again. Well, what did you expect? Jameson Taillon's not really any good. What did you expect? He hasn't pitched for 2 years. And I know when that was the Pirates, and the Pirates really are not a well-run organization, and they have to trade away guys because eventually they're going to have to pay them, and they can't pay anybody because they have no money. But that was buying low on a guy like Taillon and hoping that you would reap the rewards, and that's not happening. The fact that Brett Gardner is still playing like over 100 games or on pace to play over 100 games again for the Yankees is like mind-boggling to me. Brett Gardner's a guy that they just can't get rid of. Every time you think that there's going to be a succession plan and they're going to turn it over to some of these youngsters like Clint Frazier or whoever that's going to be, it's Gardner who always finds his way in because Aaron Hicks can't stay healthy. So much for him being your consistent number three hitter like the plan was in spring training. Now he's gone for the rest of the year, and Brett Gardner's going to get the bulk of the activity out there. They can't quit each other. You know what I equate Brett Gardner to? Now, look, he's been with the team a little bit longer than this example I'm about to bring up, but Brett Gardner is to the Yankees what Frank Gore was to the Jets last year. A guy who has outlived his usefulness as it pertains to that team, probably shouldn't be on that team, and certainly probably should not be playing anywhere near as much as they were forced to play for those teams. And thankfully, we're not going to see Frank Gore in a Jet uniform this year because the guy who singularly was responsible for having Frank Gore on the team is no longer the head coach. So that's neither here nor there. But the Yanks got to be careful here. The bats are asleep. Another woeful offensive performance today. You know, Rich Hill's shutting them down. Rich Hill, believe it. I mean, if you would have told me at the beginning of the season Rich Hill would have one of these runs in him this year, I never would have thought it was possible. He was awful in April. Last seven starts, Rich Hill has a 1.1 ERA. And Tampa Bay, you know, they treat their starting pitchers like they're fine china. How dare they go more than five innings? That's the way they operate. And it works for him. You know, I don't necessarily approve of the philosophy, and I'm a little bit more old school, like giving a team with four or five quality starting pitchers, but Tampa Bay doesn't do it. But yet they win every year, they're in the postseason every year, and even last year they got to the World Series. All right, tonight's New York Mets starting lineup is brought to you by Tullamore Dew Irish Whiskey. We do have the lineup for the Metropolitans tonight. Jonathan Villar is going to lead off and play third base. Francisco Lindor batting second, playing shortstop. The return of Pete Alonso batting third, playing first base. Dominic Smith will be in cleanup in left field. James McCann returns behind the plate. He'll bat fifth. Billy McKinney plays right field. He bats sixth. Jose Peraza hitting seventh at second base. Mason Williams, come on down. You are now a member of the New York Mets and you're in the starting lineup. He's playing center field and batting ninth. The outstanding, needs no introduction, Jacob DeGrom, the pitcher, against Merrill Kelly and the Arizona Diamondbacks. That's tonight's Mets starting lineup brought to you by Tullamore Dew. When it's game time, it's Tully time. Be sure to grab a Tullamore Dew Irish whiskey during tonight's action. Glasses up to enjoying Tullamore Dew responsibly. I'll give you guys another name. Yankee fans, if you want to do a little self-scouting and watch the game tonight that the Mets are playing out there in Arizona, if you can keep your eyes open late enough, Ketel Marte for the Arizona Diamondbacks. Outfielder. That could be, look, Arizona's going to sell. All right, they're going nowhere. They're dreadful. Arizona's going to be in sell mode. Ketel Marte might be a guy that could not only help you, because he's been banged up here a little bit, though. When healthy, he's a good player. He's a good player. What is it going to take to get him? I have no idea what the asking price is going to be for Arizona. I'll tell you, one guy you're going to stay away from, though, is Madison Bumgarner. You know, he was somebody I was all for the Yankees getting a couple of years ago when he was in the last year of his contract with the Giants because they needed a veteran arm. This year, he was off to a nice little run. Remember, he had that Fugazi no-hitter with the seven innings, but he had a nice 4-5 start stretch to where he looked like the Madison Bumgarner of old. Now he's kind of plummeted back to earth again, and he looks like a guy whose best baseball is behind him, not to mention the fact he's still got a few more years on that contract, which are way, way too prohibitive for me giving up anything significant to want to bring him onto my team. So I don't think Bumgarner is going to be a guy that you get from the Arizona Diamondbacks.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoons starting at 2 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.